on Boston Country Oldies. Michael and Stu say happy trails to you. Thanks for listening to Boston Country Oldies. Join us next time.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Happy trails to you till we meet again. Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Just sing a song and bring sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails.
The following program is brought to you by the producers and the sponsors.
This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston.
Yes, folks, it's Friday and it's Tube Talk on WRCA Radio 1330 AM. Thanks so much for tuning in.
This is the moment. I've waited for. I can hear my heart singing. Soon bells will be ringing. This is the moment. Now that we are one, clouds won't hide the sun, blue skies of Hawaii smile on this.
My baloney has a first name. It's O-S-C-A-R. My baloney has a second name. It's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day. And if you ask me, I'll say, 'cause Oscar Mayer has a way with C-O-L-O-G-N-A.
Folks, if it's 1938 and it's Artie Shaw, that must be Begin the Begin. And earlier than that, we had Little Andy Williams. Very nice way to start the program. Thank you so much for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tube Talk. This is your alternate radio AM reality. We are here each and every Friday night on WRCA 1330 AM. On the glorious broadcast band and streaming on the internet on the WRCA 1330 AM website. Welcome aboard, mateys. And you know, part of listening to this show, for better or for worse, is listening to some of my ramblings. So, you know, I ought to have a column in the newspaper somewhere, but nobody would print it, so I'll have to do it on the show here. I have this idea for a movie. And, you know, first of all, though, I mean, do you think it's easy to sit here in front of a microphone and to monologue and opine and tell stories? And you, sometimes this challenges me. So you have to bear with me when I do these things. I have an idea for a movie. This is how you know. Also, you know, we've talked about this before. If you've got the radio bug really bad, this may be a symptom that I do. I have an idea for a film. And it involves a radio nut, okay, an enthusiast. And here we are, and we wind up getting shrunken down. Now, if you had kids and you're familiar with the whole magic school bus thing, you know, it's the show, the kids shrink, and they wind up going inside the stomach of a dinosaur and seeing all this stuff that happens. And, of course, they're you know, miniaturized, so they can see all the wondrous things that go on inside. Or maybe, if you recall, there was if it was The Incredible Shrinking Man, maybe was the name of it. There's this sort of bad movie from the 50s where a guy shrinks. And I remember this scene where he's, you know, he looks like he's wearing a piece of fabric, like a diaper almost, and he's trying to fend off a cat with a pin because this guy is now like 3 inches tall. But, you know, and it looks at all the stuff in this house from the perspective of a tiny, tiny being. Where does this all go in the world of radio, you may ask? Well, here's my idea. So here I am, and all of a sudden I'm miniaturized. I'm 2 inches tall, if that. I'm wearing my Zenith radio smock, my repair smock. My shoes are shined. My dungarees are neatly pressed and cuffed. And I'm about ready to enter the world of a radio, which is this gigantic thing, because I'm 2 inches. So here I am, and I go in the back, attracted by the warm, glowing tubes, probably much like a moth. And I go in, and I get up on the chassis. I scrabble up, and I look, and there's one of the IF cans. And it looks like a skyscraper. It may as well be the Empire State Building. Whoa, this is so cool. And I'm walking around now on the chassis, and I look up at these tubes, glowing, humongous towers of glass and metal, that warm orange glow. This is amazing. And, you know, in the final scene, you know, I'm doing a hand over hand. I'm on the dial cord, and I'm trying to traverse the length of the chassis. And my hand starts to slip. Oh, no, I'm going. And, you know, I drop right onto the rectifier tube. Oh, no. Poof. And then in 1 minute, it's all gone. So what do you think of that idea for a movie, gang? You know, I mean, if you can put up with that, all I can say is, Maestro, intervene right now. Please save us all. Hey, does anybody out there think Elvis is still alive? He could be. Well, you know, he still could be alive somewhere, maybe. Not too far-fetched. If I see him, I'll let you know. And that's our friend, Mr. Elvis Presley, sort of coming along at the tail end of the vacuum tube radio phenomenon in this country, at least. And it's from 1958. The song went to number one in 1959, and I like that sound. You know, it's kind of a little rockin', boppin', hip-hoppin', Something like that. Anyway, let's shift musical gears here a little bit and go with something a little bit more along the lines that we usually hear. Is that, and that's the Pied Pipers from 1946, played in an effort to just calm down from that wild Elvis Presley song. You know, every now and then we have to play the king. You know, we must pay homage. That's our job here at Tube Talk. And we have a swell radio guest tonight waiting for us down in the comfy, cozy radio parlor for an interesting radio chat. Let's sneak one more song in before we head down to the parlor, shall we? Let's chat.
I'm old-fashioned. I love the moonlight. I love the old-fashioned thing. The sound of rain upon a window pane, the starry song that April sings. This year's fancies are passing fancies, but sighing sighs, holding hands, these my heart understands. I'm old-fashioned, but I don't mind it. That's how I want to be, as long as you'll agree to stay. With me. seas, but sighing sighs, holding hands, these my heart understands. I'm old-fashioned, but I don't mind it. That's how I want to be, as long as you'll agree to stay old-fashioned with me.
You know, that's the thing about this hobby. I think we're all a little bit old-fashioned at times. Let's head on down and check out who's our guest this week. Tube Talk is very pleased this week to welcome our special guest. He's the proprietor of StoneVintageRadio.com. He's the author of many articles on vintage radio and restoration. You may have seen some in Antique Radio Classified. And he's our guest tonight, Howard Stone from StoneVintageRadio.com. Howard, thanks for coming on.
Oh, happy to be here.
Well, you know, it's always great to have on a guest who's got a super website as well, so people who listen in can always go and, you know, refer back to some of the things that we talk about and get an idea as to what our guest is up to. And that's StoneVintageRadio.com. It's a very well laid out site, and Howard's got everything on there from some very, very early sort of historic, one would say, radios, and he's got some vacuum tube stuff that's probably familiar to all of us as well. I believe, Howard, you occasionally sell some radios on your site, and you also sell some tubes on your site, too. So if somebody's interested in buying a little piece of history, they should check you out, huh?
Yes, I do. I mean, the primary purpose of the site is just as a reference for people, a research site for people. It's a virtual museum for people to come and take a look at, but I do sell spares of radios, and I'm doing a little thinning down, and so I'm selling some there. And then I always am selling some tubes when people need a tube or whatever to get their radio going.
Well, it sounds like you might be over the bug that bothers some of us, where, you know, I was reading a list one night, and you know, you've got the collecting disease bad when you know you buy a set because, well, it looks a little better than the one I have of the same model at home, and then you get another one, well, the chassis looked a little cleaner than the other two I have at home, and then you save them all. You know, so
well, I'm not fully over that.
Yeah. Well, I hear you. I've suffered from that myself, so it's good that you try to thin the herd out a little bit. Plus, it's a great way to share some of your finds with other folks who haven't been so fortunate to come up with them. And, you know, just out of curiosity here, before we really get started, how did you get interested in the world of radio? Was this something you hooked onto as a child or later in life, or what interested you in radio in general?
My dad was really interested. He took, you know, you see the back of 20s magazines, you saw correspondence courses for radio. Well, my dad took one of those.
Oh, yeah.
He never went into it. But liked radios, and so somewhere about age 4 or 5, I built my first crystal set with my dad. And during my teenage years, people would bring me old radios, junkers, and some they would ask me to fix, and I always had my dad looking over my shoulder in case I didn't get the radio fixed properly. But I also started collecting then. Unfortunately, my mother kept saying that she was going to get rid of a bunch of these old radios if
yes.
I didn't come and get them. And I finally decided I better get them, and unfortunately, it was too late.
I know. You know, it's much like anybody who's a baseball card collector or comic books. Yeah. We've all heard those threats. Get them out of here right now.
Yep. And I did, and I had this gorgeous. It was about a 15, 18-inch square box full of blue tubes, mainly Arcturus. And I would love to have that box of tubes back.
I know.
But anyway.
It's funny because I've had guests on in the past who have spent a good deal of time trying to find that set that they once had that, you know, through some oversight or just folly, you know, at some point in their younger days they got rid of, and that very much like to get it back because it was a favorite or, you know, sentimental reasons or belonged to somebody in the family. And it can be a long quest. Now, you specialize, as you were explaining to me a little earlier, in some of the very early pieces of radio equipment. Now, I'd have to ask you, though, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to find something from the 30s, you know, the way things are going these days. And, you know, I see a lot of stuff from the 40s and 50s and now the 60s. And stereo is starting to show up at some of the meets and the swap meets. Where do you find some of this really, really old stuff, you know, something from the teens or 20s? Are you finding that it's harder to come across those things these days?
Oh, maybe a little bit. I really like very pre-1920 radios a lot, and that's been an interest of mine forever. But my wife and I are both teachers, and so we didn't have the wherewithal because many times those are expensive. But I was always willing to take on basket cases. And so, people would contact me when they had a basket case, and they figured, well, no one else would want to deal with this, so we'll give it to Howard. So I ended up buying it from them and restoring it. I do get some people contact me through the website. I recently got an early Marconi piece. Someone contacted me at the website and said they had one. They knew what it was worth, but would I be interested in it? And, of course, I said, yes, I was. It was a basket case, and it's going to be the next project I take on. But it was a Marconi 112, which is about 1917, I think, 1916-17.
Yeah, that's super that somebody would contact. You know, occasionally it's I'm a member of the New England Antique Radio Club, and I guess from our conversations, you're a member of the Vintage Radio and Phonograph Society down in Texas. Sometimes, yeah. as being an officer of the club, I'll get an email, from somebody, would you guys want this? You know, I found this in my uncle's house, my grandfather's house. And it's nice that somebody at least takes the time, you know, if they think something has some value, to see if anybody might be interested, you know, before they go to the, you know, the junkyard or the dumpster or, you know, just, you know, here, give it to the secondhand store where somebody who might not really know what's up with it, if it doesn't sell in 2 months, you know, off it goes into the dumpster. So, you know, it's nice that they contact you. That's another good reason to have a website if you're in this hobby.
Yeah, it's been a help, especially to get the very early pieces. Plus, I have different people around the country every once in a while contact me. I've lived in England on several occasions, and actually the first piece of wireless equipment came from England. I had a friend over there who taught history of technology, history of science in Cambridge. And he made no money, so he would do a little antique work on the side. And one time I was showing him through a book, and I pointed out a magnetic detector and a multiple tuner, and I said, if you ever see these when you're out, just buy it and call me. And wouldn't you know, late one night I got this call, and he had gone to preview a show, and there was a magnetic detector there. And so he ended up buying it, and he made good money on it. And I was very happy because he gave me a very fair price on it. And that was the first Marconi piece I got.
Well, it's great to have sort of a network, too. You know, people who more eyes are better than one set. And,
For sure.
And it helps that they know they can turn it over to somebody who, regardless of its condition, you know, I mean, it sounds like you like the challenges. So, I'm sure people are very confident when they sell something to you or turn something over to you for restoration. Now, amidst everything that we would find on StoneVintageRadio.com, there are some very early sets. And you were going to tell us a little bit. You had a couple of interesting sets that you said were very near and dear to your heart. One is a wireless specialty IP76 crystal wireless set from 1911. And, if you recall, where did you come up with that set? That sounds like an oldie.
Yes, I got it as if you look on the website at that piece, I have a picture of it in its early stages, and it was only partially there, and I had to then start the task of tracing down, trying to find the rest of the parts to reassemble it. But I got that from another collector who already had one. And, of course, he had the good one, and this one wasn't as good, but
oh, yes.
it's a very rare set. I was very happy to get it. The Marconi 16 crystal set was made in 1914, and according to the story that I got from another collector had it and had worked on it a little bit and just had so many projects, decided to move it on to someone else.
Sure.
But about 1918, it was sunk and sat in the ocean until the end of the previous century. And so 80-some years, it was under the water. And the problem is when it came up to the surface, things started really deteriorating from the effects of the salt water.
Yep, yep.
And so that was the biggest project ever taken on. One of the hardest parts was getting the coils inside, because they still have the original coils in there with the original silk cover of the wires, but to get them to stop corroding. And I looked and talked. I taught it at Texas Christian University, TCU, for a number of years. So I went to talk to people there, and as I talked to other restorers of early sets, and basically what they said was the best thing to do is just warm water with maybe a little bit of soap. And so what I would do is I just soak them, then put them on the shelf, and I did that, and then I'd check it another week. If I saw any bit of corrosion, I'd be back soaking it again. And it took about 30 hours of soaking, a series of soakings on each coil, to get them so that their corrosion at least went way down to almost nothing.
That's sometimes those simple solutions, you know, sort of a very basic solution, though, if you're willing to be dedicated enough to put in that type of time, you know, work the best with some of these stuff. You know, it's funny, you're an old TCU guy. One of my cousin's sons is the biggest TCU fan on the planet. And doesn't go anywhere without his hat. And I got to tell you,
I have mine on right now. Of course, we're all kind of proud in Fort Worth right now that TCU's ranked fourth in the nation in football, and so it's there's quite a buzz around here with excitement about the football team.
Well,
it's been great this year.
It's funny because I thought I knew some people who were avid football fans, and then I met this kid, and you know, Texas is its own world as far as football goes. It's big time stuff, and it's fun that people still get that excited about it. So it's great. Now back to the Marconi set and to the, you know, the wireless specialty. What type of frequency or what type of wavelength, what could one receive on something like that? Were those geared for some type of special communications, or would it pick up regular broadcast, or was it what type of signal would you get?
Yeah, those were primarily long wave. But they would bleed into the broadcast band somewhat as well. But you know, Marconi himself thought that even the broadcast band, let alone shortwave, was worthless and unimportant because you'd never be able to receive on those. And so he put all his focus on longwave, which is below the broadcast band.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's not much on there anymore except for maybe a few type of industrial signals, but not much there. And a little bit in Europe, you can still hear a few stations over there on longwave. When I used to live in England, I would regularly, the BBC was on longwave at that time, and I would listen to stations from Amsterdam and the like.
Yeah, it's great that you had a chance, you know, to use some of this stuff still, and that's one of the challenges today with, you know, especially other than the show that we're on right now, which is, you know, one of the gems of the broadcast band, as they say. You know, I mean, there's so many syndicated programs that sound the same, and a lot of people have sort of sounded the death toll on AM. You know, folks will make up little AM transmitters and broadcast music from their computer that they find old-time or old-time radio shows. They're starving, you know, for content to listen to on their sets. So it's nice that you still were able to pick something up, you know, through these great little pieces of history. Now, one other question I have, and I have a friend up here who's in the club, and he's been on the show many times. He's an excellent repair guy, and his forte used to be, he used to work for Grundig. He was their factory representative up here for many years, and after he got his fill of the European sets, which I still know he has way too many of in his barn, his new love is communications receivers, but he has some of his own little terms he's cooked up, and you know, a part that you just can't find anywhere. He'll say, you know, that's unobtainium. Where'd you get that? How'd you find it? You know, because how do you get parts for some of this, especially this really, you know, historic stuff that goes way, way back? Do you have to find another set, or can you improvise or make something, you know, and fit it into the schematic that and it will actually work?
I really try to be authentic and have original circuit, original type of parts. One of the things that I had to learn was how to use a metal lathe to make a binding post every once in a while, or a part like that. But then I use the network, and I'm just hunting all the time. I'm working right now. I have two United Wireless D receivers, crystal receivers from about 1908, and one of them I've had for about 4 or 5 years. The other one I've had for about 6 months, but I just was hunting and all of a sudden came up with a source of some parts to finish these off. So that's what I'm doing right now, is doing some finishing of these pieces. But I just call, beg. I mean, you can't be proud.
Yes.
and you know, you go to meets. You go to
sure.
radio meets. I prefer meets that are more based upon flea markets, because they're where you see the parts that you might need. The Vintage Radio and Phonograph Society here in Fort Worth is a great club, but it's primarily based on auctions. I don't get that many parts here.
Right.
I tend to have to go to other venues for to find parts.
And you know who might be a good resource now, and now that he's retired from his days of editing Antique Radio Classified, is John Terry has a little website, and he has all kinds of ancient devices, you know, radio included. But I've occasionally, he's been kind enough. We have a big radio swap meet up here in February. It's a big, big deal on the East Coast, and our club now sponsors it. And what he's done very kindly is, when our meet concludes, and this is in February up here, so sometimes the weather isn't too good, and it can be a little bit of a challenge getting around. But John has very kindly, you know, he says, I'll take a list. Anybody who's interested in going over to my old radio museum, which he has, is not far from where we meet, is it'll take you through, you know. And I haven't been able to take advantage of it, but someday I would.
Oh, it's a wonder. I've been there several times. John's a good friend, and he's just got a wonderful museum in a wonderful building.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. And another pal of ours, he's been on the show. We had a good talk about a Briggs & Stratton crystal radio receiver, is Dale Boyce up in Wisconsin.
Yep. I know,
and
Dale.
he's a character, and at one point he was making antique radio calendars, but he's particularly fond of anything that comes from Wisconsin. And
right.
But much like yourself, he's got these stories of, you know, the hunt. You know, he's been hunting for this particular Briggs & Stratton set, and, you know, lo and behold, he comes across it, and it's, you know, like a kid at Christmas times 10, you know, when you're lucky enough to come across some of this stuff. So it's a unique little niche within the hobby, you know, because so many people, you say, oh, gee, I'm into, you know, vintage radio or antique radio, and they immediately think of, you know, the Walton, or they think of something with a tuning eye or with tubes or a console, something we would normally see from the 30s or 40s, or maybe some little Bakelite plastic sets from the 50s, and they don't go back. You know, they can't even conceive of the old three-dialer and, you know, some of the things that you would work on that, you know, came along even before that. They just, you know, looks more like an experiment or a science lab project. and radio really was something for the tinkerer and the scientist or the person who had a fascination with electricity. And, you know, a lot of these things, you know, mean a lot to folks who still like to work with their hands or to try to understand that technology. And, you know, what a great hobby it must have been in the teens, the tens and the teens and even the 20s for the hobbyist.
It's fortunate that there are still people who like to work on the radios. There are still ham radio operators who still like to build or restore old sets and get them going. For me, the thing, I'm not real good at going out and getting sets, in spite of what you've said, some kind things about the early pieces. I'm not very good at that. What I like most of all is restoring and bringing a piece of history back to life. And I try to, as much as possible, do a more museum-quality restoration of these pre-1920 radios, because most of them will end up in a museum at some time in the future.
Yeah, and it's great that, you know, there's a radio club up here, our pals down in New Jersey at NJARC. And, you know, it's great when there's an outreach involved. I know that NJARC has a museum of sorts. They have a permanent exhibit in a place. It's called Info Age, and it's a museum designed, and you're going to like where this goes, designed to celebrate technology, and obviously they have a spot in there that's dedicated to radio. They have volunteers from the club who will go in, and they will meet with Boy Scouts or visitors or anybody who's interested in antique radio technology, and they'll, you know, do their best to give them a little education. They may have some exhibits that they bring in there, and they are fortunate enough to be in a site, and I believe there was a Marconi building, or they may even be in a Marconi building that's in this little spot in New Jersey that they're in, or something that belonged to Marconi's company. And I said, you know, that is just so cool, you know, that you can do that and have that, and it keeps some of the people real happy, you know, some of the guys who have a bent towards education, you know, as you mentioned, you were a teacher, you know, who are members of the club, they say, well, that's great. I'll go down and volunteer for a few hours. But you can restore it and preserve it and share it, and that is just, you know, the greatest thing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And, you know, one of the things, too, you know, you kind of evolve a little bit as you collect. I've been collecting for, you know, many years. At first it was, 40s and 30s radios, then slipping in the 20s. One of the things, my wife and I both have some background in music, so really like music. And so we always have several tube stereo sets, because I restore and I also build single-ended amplifiers. And so we always have some of those at the house. And I've just developed an appreciation for tubes and really have increasingly in recent years been collecting more and more, especially of the very early tubes. But my problem has always been is there's not a radio I can't fall in love with, and so I have to, you know, you have to restrain yourself, and especially as you continue to get older, you have to keep thinning a little bit, or it gets out of hand.
Well, you know, the other problem is too, and we've had this conversation with many people on many nights. You know, you have to be able to resist the consoles, because where people are pressed, people are pressed for space, especially if you live up in the Northeast or, you know, out in California somewhere, real estate's expensive, or if you're in an apartment or a condo, what do you do with those things? And fortunately or unfortunately, what's happened is the price has come down on some of these consoles, especially as people are trying to move some of their collections along, or if they have to move to a smaller place or retire. And so what happens is it's more of a temptation. So where you might not be tempted when it was too expensive 20, 25 years ago, now you look at some of the prices and you say, you know. So it may be a good thing that, you know, they still made four tube Bakelite sets so you can find a place to put them.
A real test of a marriage, too, in our family, we have what's called the Karen console rule. If one console comes in the house, one goes out the same day.
Yep.
But the biggest thing we have is in our bedroom, I have a full kilowatt Clap Eastman transmitter and receiver, which is the size of a big desk, and the thing works. And so you just have, I mean, that was a real test of the marriage to have that big a piece in there. But it's one of my favorite pieces in the whole collection. It's what you see when you first get on Stone Vintage Radio. You see me right in front of it.
Well, you know, the thing is, too, you know, with something like that, you know, who needs heat for the house? I mean, I'm sure when that thing warms up, you're all set, you know, which is one of the other advantages. You know, I tell some of my friends who aren't into the hobby, I said, you know, if you can get some of the right sets, you'll completely eliminate the need for those dangerous space heaters. We replace them all with antique electronics. And they just sort of look at me like I'm nuts, and, you know, that's really nothing new whatsoever. So, again, folks, if you'd like to see some of the projects Howard has worked on and some things in his collection, or really just get a feel, you know, or if you're new to the hobby or if you're a casual collector, you know, the nice thing is you can go to stonevintageradio.com. You can look from the very, very early years up through some of the stuff that I'm sure you'd be familiar with. If you've, you know, liked old TV shows or old movies, you'll see some of the more familiar vacuum tube sets. But it's a nice site because it's a true compendium. It's a nice timeline. And as Howard said, it is his museum. And it sounds like you've put an awful lot of time and dedication and energy into restoring some of these sets. And it's a worthy endeavor because as the hobby grays a little bit and gets a little bit less popular, it's more incumbent upon all of us who are still involved in the hobby to talk it up and to, more importantly, do something about it. And you certainly have down there. So, Howard, I'd like to say thanks an awful lot for taking your time tonight and being on. Anybody who's interested, check out his site. If you lived up here, I seem to find things that don't look like basket cases, but then you get them home, you know, after the meet, and you go underneath it, and you say, you know, maybe I'm going to bring that. I'm going to get a table at the next meet, and I think I'll let this thing go for $5 if I'm lucky, or there's always the free table, because sometimes you're right. If you're willing to take a set that's in really tough shape, so many other people who say, you know what, I either don't have the skills, or I don't have the time, or I'm afraid I could never do it, you know. So, you know, they pass on some things that have some real value to them because it's just in real rough shape. So if you're willing to take on the challenge, there's some real rewards to working on those basket cases. So it's great that
thank you very much for inviting me to be on. And it's a great avocation of the history of radio and, again, continuing to preserve some of these sets for future generations.
Hey, Howard, thanks again for being on. You have a great night now. Thanks for being on the program this week.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Racing with the moon, high up in the midnight. And then all too soon, it's lost from view. Fade away. blue heavens I see your face smiling at me. My heart will never be free until we're back together, racing with the moon. That is what I'll always do. Till I overtake the moon and you.
Yes, Racing with the Moon, right here on Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM. We'd like to extend our thanks to Mr. Howard Stone from StoneVintageRadio.com. Friends, if you'd like to see a nifty online radio museum packed with some great photographs, very well laid out, and some nifty sets, that's the place to you. Thanks again for being on this week, Howard.
This program is brought to you by the makers of Popsicle, Fudgicle, and Creamsicle. Those delicious frozen confections on a stick. Now I have a swell surprise for you. The famous winner of the typical American boy contest has now become Popsicle Pete. And here's a message from him.
Hello, everybody. I sure am glad to meet you. And boy, am I glad I was picked to be the typical American boy. Because now I'm Popsicle Pete. I always wanted to be on the radio. And now I have a chance to tell you about some wonderful presents you can get free. See, you ought to see them. Hundreds of them. You get them just for saving bags from Nifty Popsicle, Fudgicle, and Creamsicle. Some gifts, even better than Christmas. You can get a wristwatch, a movie camera, table tennis, a wallet, a doll. Gee, lots of gifts. Just save the bags from Popsicle, Creamsicle, and Fudgicle on a handy stick. Boy, do they taste good.
Wholesome, too, and nourishing. Made fresh every day of the finest ingredients. The biggest 5 cents worth anywhere.
And say, kids, get the free illustrated Popsicle gift list at your ice cream store. A free coupon comes with it, worth 10 bags.
Thanks a lot, Popsicle Pete. I always wanted to be on the radio, too. And if you even know what a fudgicle or a creamsicle is, folks, let me assure you, you have found the radio program of your dreams. Thanks so very much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed our swell guest and some of our nifty tunes, even our upbeat and hot Elvis Presley special tonight. I wonder if we'll get some email on that. Anyway, almost time for us to head out, take cover for the evening and relax, head off, trundle off, see you again next week. You know, all the old cliches, pull them out. But long story short, it's almost time to wrap up the show, and we haven't heard from Les Paul in a little while, so here we go. Sounds better than listening to me anyway, huh?
Now the hacienda's dark, the town is sleeping. Now the time has come to part, the time for weeping. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love. Now the village mission bells are softly ringing. If you listen with your heart, you'll hear them singing. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love. Wherever you may be, I'll be beside you. Although your many million dreams away, each night I'll say a prayer to guide you the dawn is breaking through a great tomorrow. But the memories we share are there to borrow. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love.
Vaya con Dios, folks. Mary Ford and Les Paul. Hey, if you'd like to reach us, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. If you'd like to check out our site, it's tubetalkclassicradio.org. And you know what? Well, it's almost that time of the year, so I guess I can get away with this, huh?
Just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry. May your